Chapter 12. Weirdly Drunk. Regis struggled and writhed and almost broke free, pulling himself nearly out of the fountain. But the water weird caught him and shoved him down again, harder this time, and he cracked his head on the bottom of the basin. He flailed and tried to splash, but the world was going darker, darker, until his consciousness left him. He woke up some time later, still pressed to the floor of the watery basin. Surprised to be alive, the halfling tried to make sense of it, and it took him many moments of near panic before he recalled once more his Ganassi heritage. He would have drowned long ago were it not for that fortunate bloodline. He wasn't sure just how long he'd been down, or how much time he might have left, plain-touched Ganassi or no. He didn't thrash now. The weird had nearly split his skull the last time he had fought against it. Instead, he quietly eased his hand to his hip and slid forth his three-bladed dirk, the outer two shaped like curving serpents. Then he moved quickly, twisting and stabbing at the thing, once, twice, thrice. The water splashed. The monster pressed him down and slapped at the halfling's stabbing arm with its tendrils. Out of the corner of his eye, Regis could see the dagger scoring its hits, but could see, too, that those hits were doing little, if anything, to the malleable weird. A few droplets splashed aside, though whether those were just water or pieces of the monster he could not know. What he did know was that he couldn't win this fight. Soon the tendril caught his arm. Worse, the weird now pressed down on his head with tremendous force, crushing him against the basin bottom. He flailed once more, screaming useless bubbles. When his dirk was slapped from his hand, he tried to punch, claw anything. His other hand went to his belt pouch, grasping around blindly, and when his fingers finally grabbed something, he smashed it into the water. Three silver coins floated down beside his bulging eyes. Then came a potion flask, overturned and half-floating, its cork bumping against his face. He tried to blow it aside, but alas, he was finally out of breath. He was drowning. He tried to scream, tried to turn, tried to rise. He punched, grasped, slapped, clawed, and he did manage to catch the bottom of the bobbing flask. As his vision started to blur, strange thoughts flitted through his mind. One crazy idea hit him with desperate strength. Perhaps the flask was unused and full of air. Had his head been on straight, he would have known it to be wishful thinking, but he bit at the cork anyway, twisted and gnashed, and when it pulled free, he tried to gulp at the stem. But no, it was not empty, and instead of sweet air filling his lungs, a dark liquid poured forth, coloring the water, and now he couldn't even see. Darkness closed in once more, not unconsciousness this time, but the deeper sleep of death. At least he had relayed the important information to Iberdell. He had not let his friends down, not in this lifetime as so often in the previous. He tried to focus on that, certain he was doomed, but then, so suddenly, the basin shuddered, and the water heaved as if a tsunami had struck. Before he could register what was happening, Regis was flying through the air and back into the room. He landed hard on the floor, sitting on his butt, gulping air for all his life, and trying to back away from that watery monster, watching the basin closely with every movement. The weird rose up menacingly, like a liquid club, higher and higher. Then it swirled left, then around to the right, swaying in a mesmerizing dance, very much like a serpent. Oh no, Regis cursed, expecting it to lash out at him, hoping he was far enough away and knowing he was almost certainly not. But the weird dove back under the basin edge, water splashing all about. Then it rose up again suddenly, but just a bit, before flattening, and again, and a third time, almost as if bubbles within it were compelling it. Regis shook his head, confused. Was this some sort of spell casting? It didn't seem so, but looked more like some internal distress. Hiccups? He looked to the potion flask, still in his hand. Gut chaser. The halfling's eyes popped open wide, and he stared incredulously at the bubbling, hiccuping basin. He crawled aside, putting more distance between himself and the monster, but circling to retrieve his valuable dirk. He found it sticking into the floor, the fine magical blade cutting easily and deeply into a seam in the wood. He struggled to tug it free, finally taking a chunk of the wooden flooring with it, and he turned quickly to be out of this cursed room. The glint of gold stopped him short, though, and the halfling's eyes widened indeed when he looked at that chip in the floor. When he realized that the subflooring of this particular room was golden. Regis dug at the wood with his dagger, tearing strips and throwing them aside. No hungry dog ever went for a bone more determinedly. He lifted gold coins into his hand, and gold bars and platinum, and gems and jewels, all sorts of expensive bits now suddenly just lying here for him to take. He began to stuff his pouch, giggling, for he knew that he could probably empty this entire room into that magical extra-dimensional space, and his mood was suddenly improved as thoughts of near death vanished with the shining treasure before him. He fell to work, practically humming, until he heard behind him, "Well now, a little pack rat, is he?" "You would be wise to summon Matron Shakti Hunsrin to your home," Escavidney told Matron Jindia Malarn back in Menzo Baranzon. Matron Jindia looked curiously at the two Yoklils. Shakti had been there only 2 days before and was often a visitor to House Malarn, particularly now, when Jindia was helping her with her newest and most valuable trade pieces, fine jewelry that was much more than it seemed. "What do you know?" Jindia asked suspiciously. "It is quite likely that Matron Shakti can supply you with unexpected support in your hunt for this reborn Doerden creature," Escavidney explained. "She has installed on the surface powerful allies." Matron Jindia shook her head and harumphed. This scenario had already played out once on the surface, after all, and not at all to her advantage. "You will see," Escavidney promised. She glanced at her Yoklo counterpart and nodded, and the two disappeared in a flash, leaping through the plains to the antechamber of Lady Lolf's throne room. "It will be an enjoyable spectacle," Escavidney promised upon their return. Yekardaria, who had been less convinced of their course, though she dearly wanted to pay back Ivanel and the others for their treachery, added, "Hopefully it will prove at least informative, sister, for that alone will properly amuse the Spider Queen." Escavidney let out a giggle, which turned into a gurgle, which turned into popping bubbles of sludge as she reverted to her natural form. Two men stood by the door, one holding a mace, the other a sword. They looked like Margasters, that same pale skin and pitch-black hair, and both were large and strong, obviously made of that Uthgard stock. Regis made a quick assessment of the room, silently calculating steps in various directions. The Margasters approached, and up hopped the halfling, tossing his magical torch into the weird fountain, where it was immediately swallowed by the strange monster, greatly diminishing the light in the room. Regis ran left, but just a stride, then cut back to the right, then left again as he charged at the duo. He feinted left once more, then fast back to the right, only to cut between the two, running past them. Any excitement was tempered by the fact that they were right behind. He could barely see, but he had to chance it, and upon reaching the door, he leaped high, catching the pendulum just above the blade and riding it out into the hallway. There he raised his legs to set his feet against the wall and shoved off, throwing the pendulum back behind him. He let go, fell to the floor, and rolled aside immediately, coming to his feet and drawing his weapons. A torch flared to life inside the room as the pendulum came swinging back at him, then back into the room. As soon as it disappeared, out leaped the first of the Margasters, coming fast at the halfling. He held his dirk at the ready, but didn't intend to use it up close if he could help it. With a quick motion, one of the side blades came off in his hand, and with a flick of his wrist, he launched it at the charging man. That snake-shaped weapon catcher then became a real serpent, and it rushed up the man's chest to loop about his neck, a living garrote choking him. At the same time, a leering specter appeared over his shoulder, a manifestation of the wicked weapon, and it tugged mightily, easily yanking the powerful man to his back on the floor. Before he even landed, the halfling had the second missile away at the remaining opponent. That Margaster flew into the air as well, his torch sailing from his hand and bouncing off the returning pendulum when the heavy blade hit the poor fellow across the legs as he tumbled backward. Regis winced, seeing the gash in the poor man's legs, and grimaced even more as he watched the strangling specters do their work. He hadn't come in here to kill anyone. And again, he hadn't come here to die either. He started back into the room, jarred by the impact. The pendulum wasn't swinging anymore, but stopped short. He glanced farther along the tunnel and decided no on that route as well. The problem was he had to get out of there, but didn't want to face the prospect of the freezing canal again while being pursued. Other than that, however, he didn't have the slightest idea where to go. He started past the first man, who was flailing helplessly, turning blue. Regis stopped and waited, watching closely. The man's struggling decreased with each passing second. He issued a little gurgling sound, but Regis waited a bit longer. He had to make sure the man was down for a while, at least. Beyond the pendulum, the other Margaster lay very still, perhaps already dead. "Damn, damn, damn," the halfling cursed, moving his rapier closer, almost stabbing the specter, but waiting. He had to wait. Finally, the man subsided, falling limp, and Regis poked the specter with his rapier, destroying it. He started to bend for the man, unsure if the fellow was dead or alive, but he shook his head in frustration, for he had not the time. He rushed past the pendulum, scooped up the Margaster's dropped torch, and poked the second specter, freeing the second man. He heard a cough behind him, which made him feel somewhat better as he raced back down the hallway. He neared the entry cavern, hoping the poisoned chamberman was still resting comfortably. He grinned as he neared, hearing snores, and so he went in feeling confident. That feeling quickly dissipated, though, because what awaited was the frozen canal. It probably wouldn't kill him, but it certainly wasn't warm. He found the man where he had left him, snoring loudly. Wasting no time, Regis began to strip, stuffing his cloak, his boots, and his shirt into his magical pouch. He had just pulled the hand crossbow from around his neck when he heard sounds from down the hallway, and sighed, thinking one of the guards had recovered from the choking and was stubbornly pursuing.
"Alas and ah well," he whispered, setting a bolt and cocking the hand crossbow.
The door opened, and yet it was not one of the guards who walked in, but a woman, tall and raven-haired and quite pretty. Inkeri Margaster, the one who had been standing beside Lord Neverember when the dwarves had come with a payment, walked in calmly.
"What mischief is this, little one?" she said.
Regis sighed, not wanting to shoot a lady.
But he did anyway.
The quarrel flew across the room to catch her right in the chest. She gave hardly a yip, then looked down at it curiously, then back up at Regis.
"Well now," she said, pulling out the bolt and tossing it aside.
Regis stared at her from across the way, looking for some sign that the poison was taking effect. But no. She rubbed her hands together and moved closer. As she did, a gemstone pendant hanging about her neck flickered with an inner light, and Inkeri began to expand. At first Regis thought it a simple wizard spell, but then her face reshaped suddenly, growing a snout, and two more arms sprouted up above the normal ones, and these ended not in hands, but in huge pincers, and even then his eyes were drawn away to the tail now growing behind her. He didn't think she looked so pretty anymore. And more certainly, she was nothing Regis wanted to battle. He hadn't even fully finished his turn when he dove for the water, his bad angle causing him to scrape painfully on the edge of the stone floor as he went in. He ignored the pain and didn't dare turn back to try to swim against the current to the spot where he had first entered. No, he just swam for all his life, deeper under the castle. He heard the commotion behind him when the monster jumped in, and so he swam faster, frantically. In complete darkness, fully submerged, he paddled and kicked wildly. He tried to come up for air but could not, instead banging his head hard on the ceiling of the tight tunnel. Again, he resisted the urge to look back. He couldn't see anything anyway, and just swam blindly as fast as he could, hoping against hope that he'd find a way out, and that the monster chasing him would not catch him. On and on he went, and his lungs began to ache. He stopped and called to his pouch, bringing a small ceramic ball to his hand. He knew he'd be marking himself clearly, but he could only hope the fiend wasn't nearby. He broke the ball, freeing the stone inside, one coated with Dayglow oil. He saw the floor, he saw the walls, he saw the ceiling. Up he went carefully, clearing the water just enough to suck in another breath. He dropped the light source then and swam on for some distance, this time looking back to the lighted area. Just as he was growing somewhat confident, a large form crossed into the light. Regis couldn't make it out fully. But he really didn't need to. There was only one thing it could be. On he swam, back into complete darkness, sometimes crashing into a wall, once scraping painfully on a shelf in the floor, more than once banging his head as he went up to try to draw in a breath. And while he was at least getting air into his lungs, his muscles were starting to ache from the exertion and cold. Then he crashed into something. A pole, he thought. He tried to go around it, but no, it was not a pole. It was a grate. He fished another Dayglow ball from his pouch and lit the area, to find himself trapped at a portcullis.
He looked all about, but no, there were no levers to be found. He grabbed at the bars and tried to lift, to no avail. Panic began to set in. He was trapped. After a moment of futile tugging and searching, and even trying to squeeze through the bars, the halfling turned back. Dare he hope the fiend had broken off pursuit and he might slip by? The thought lasted only a moment, because a dark form appeared at the edge of his light. He went for his rapier, but knew that he had no chance fighting such a monster. Still, he reached for his dirk, too, single-bladed now. He paused, his mind whirling, seeking some answer. None came, other than the surety that he was about to die. He had his hand by his magical pouch, though he didn't know why. Perhaps to grab more light sources to try to drive the monster away? To grab a gut chaser or two to numb himself from the pain and the horror of certain death? He saw the monster clearly now, eyes drawn to its pincers, either of which could easily snip him in half. They were already eagerly snapping in the water. He saw the dog-like face leering, seeming like it was smiling. Regis wanted to cry. He didn't want to die like this, half-naked in the cold water, in a place where his friends, where his beloved Denala, would likely never find him. He resolved to fight ferociously, and nearly laughed at himself for the absurd thought. Even if he could defeat this thing, surely he would do so only to drown before he could find air. And only then, in that moment of complete resignation and hopelessness, did the halfling remember. And in doing so, he cursed his own foolishness. For Regis had not come down here expecting to swim back out. He would find his way to the back stair, or... He pulled a small vial from his pouch, his most expensive and impressive potion. A pincer came out at him as he quaffed it, and he felt the sharp edges cutting along his sides. His mouth opened as he started to scream. But then his mouth was gone. And then his body was gone, insubstantial, a gaseous form, and the pincer closed harmlessly through where he should have been. Regis, no more substantial than a cloud, slipped through the portcullis and drifted along, no longer feeling the cold, no longer feeling any compulsion to draw breath. He did note the fiend tearing at the portcullis, bending the bars, and so he willed himself to go as fast as he could, which really wasn't very fast. He couldn't swim, after all, having nothing with which to push against the water. He was moving, though, and faster than the current, at least. Still, it seemed like forever before he at last crossed out from under the castle, from under the main boulevard of Neverwinter, from under another cluster of houses, and from under Neverwinter's city wall. He came up out of the water, scrambling to the muddy land, and barely had he emerged when his potion wore off, and he became a sputtering, freezing, half-naked halfling, sitting beside an icy canal in a snow-filled forest. He went for his pouch immediately, and brought forth his cloak, scrambling all the while, trying to put some distance between himself and the water. He ran, stumbling repeatedly, but stubbornly pulling himself back up every time, ever onward, ever away. He didn't know how far he had gone when he heard a shriek from far behind. An otherworldly, hideous, bone-chilling shriek. And Regis knew that he had not evaded the pursuit. So he somehow got his boots out, finally, and put them on, and he ran even harder, because what else could he do? The night was not dark, and with the reflections off the snow clinging stubbornly to the shadier areas in the forest, the halfling could make out his way fairly easily. He also saw the shadows, though, moving shadows, flitting from tree to tree in the distance to his right, then more to the left. Regis put his head down and ran faster, ran for all his life, which he was pretty sure was no exaggeration, fearing that he was being flanked on both sides by some hellish demons. Behind him he heard a shriek and a guttural roar, not nearly far enough away for his liking. Somehow he knew these monsters would never tire, and he would never make it out the other side of Neverwinter Wood. He needed another plan. He needed a place to hide. Before he had even truly considered it, he skidded to a stop and crouched, letting the shadows pass him by, then ran behind them to the east, toward, he believed, Iberdell's stable. Only a short while later, he broke out of the underbrush and onto the muddy road. Right, back toward Neverwinter, would take him to the stable, and so he started to turn that way. But no, he realized, how could he bring such a horde of fiends upon the poor elven woman? He sprinted to the left, north. He shook his head with almost every step, however, knowing that he'd never get ahead of the pursuit. His lungs burned, his legs ached, he was cold, and the scrape from diving into the waterway was bothering him more than he wanted to admit. Down one straightaway, he happened to glance back, in time to see a hulking, four-armed fiend crash out onto the road. Along the sides, hidden in the brush and tangle, he heard hissing now, and the occasional grunt and cracking branches and twigs. He focused forward, even though there was no point. It would be over soon. He felt as if he were rushing toward his end, a thought amplified when he heard footsteps ahead on the road. He was out of places to run. He had to go left or right, and quickly, so he tried to discern which side likely had the fewest monsters. Left, he decided, and he turned, only for the footsteps on the road to become louder. No, he skidded to a stop. It wasn't footsteps he'd been hearing, but hoofbeats. A rider. Away he ran again, toward the sound, thinking it his only chance. He slipped on some ice and crashed down hard, but came up immediately, scrambling, trying to get his feet under him. And he let out a yell when just around the bend before him came a large, dark form. He dove back to the ground and covered up, cowering. He felt the splash of mud over him and heard the screech of scraping iron shoes over cobblestones. Spider! The surprised halfling looked up to see Iberdell staring down at him. He leaped to his feet and leaped again at her, to her reaching hand, and as soon as he caught it, he cried out, "Ride, ride, ride, for all our lives, ride!" The horse whinnied and reared, and Regis nearly fell from her grasp, desperately trying to set himself as the skilled elf horsewoman turned her mount about, then kicked the steed away furiously, never once asking a question. It wasn't until Regis got into his seat behind her and glanced back that he understood her quick actions. It was less to do with his urgent words, and more to do with the four-armed, dog-faced demon running behind them, almost keeping stride. From the bushes on the side, the shadowed monsters found form and leaped as well, all manner of misshapen fiend, some no more than zombie-like humans, others black-skinned and frog-like but running upright, with clawed hands and rows of formidable teeth. Through the grotesque menagerie went the galloping horse, demons leaping and clawing the air, biting hard with click-clicking sounds all about the fleeing duo. Regis tried to block his ears and scream it all away, but it mattered little. The cacophony of hellish hunger did fade, though, as the strong horse outran them, its nostrils flaring, puffing steam into the night with every long stride. It was going hard and needed to rest, but Iberdell didn't dare let up. Not that she needed to encourage their mount all that much. The road bent to the right for a long way, then straightened back to the north, but just as Iberdell eased the mount to the left, a creature leaped out of the brush to block the path, and the elf pulled up hard on the reins, skidding the horse to a stop. Apparently, the four-armed demon, in Carrie Margaster or another fiend just like her, had taken a shortcut straight through the brush, clearing it away with great pincers, hardly slowing at all to cross out ahead of them on the circuitous road. Just as apparently, the elf and halfling were in a great deal of trouble. "We fight it," Iberdell said, for what else was there to do? Regis, gasping and huffing too much to verbally respond, nodded and grabbed for his rapier, thinking to slide off the horse. "I'll take it aside," he said, when he at last found his breath, his boots splashing down in the mud. "Get to Bleeding Vines and tell them." "No," she started to argue, but she stopped short and so did Regis in his demand, for a flash of fire erupted in the road right in front of the fiend. More chaos and an already chaotic night. With the fire, another form dropped down from on high, falling right behind the monster, swords in hand and slashing at the fiend's back before it could even register what was happening. "Ride, you fools," the newcomer called, diving aside as the fiend spun about, batting with all four arms. Regis thought he recognized the voice and the lithe form, not to mention the graceful movements, as the newcomer rolled aside, came back to his feet, and dove in at the fiend, his blade spinning in a deadly dance. Even as the halfling tried to speak out his name, though, he felt a hand grab his cloak at the scruff of his neck, and he was jerked from his feet so forcefully that he nearly lost a boot. Right by the battle went Iberdell's mount, and Regis got a look at their rescuer and realized it to be a drow he certainly knew.